Welcome this morning to the topic on perfection. You'll see the verse from Matthew 5:48 here. It says, "Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." I remember going to teachers' meetings. I think I told you the other day, and I was waiting for them to get more practical. They were all good ideas, but I wanted something that I could take to the classroom my first day of school and use it. And I'm afraid you look at this topic, and maybe by now you're kind of looking over the outline and saying, another one of those more theoretical topics. But when Jonathan and Joan and I got together and had the opportunity to think about what it is that especially first-year teachers need more than anything else, and we only had a half a dozen or nine topics to do it in, I got to thinking back over my years of teaching. Rex that I had in my first years of teaching school, and I've had opportunity to teach with, I think it's 15 or 20 first-year teachers. So I've seen successes and otherwise. And as I look back, the things with eternal consequence didn't necessarily come because you didn't have enough procedures in place. And they didn't necessarily come because you didn't know the curriculum as well as they said. The things with eternal consequence, the biggest wrecks came from character flaws in myself and in others. And today, my purpose in this topic, and I hope I can convey it to you, is that it's important that you and I are holy. We as teachers sometimes begin to think that everything revolves around, well, like we heard this morning, me. And it's all about getting them to understand science facts and math facts, and that's all it's about. And so we make choices that aren't good. This might be as good a time as any. Some of you, in visiting with a number of you, I noticed that you're leaving your what we call our home community and going to another community. If you have things, relationship things, that need to be cleared up before you go, do that before you go. Today isn't any too soon to get that taken care of. I remember one co-teacher of mine making a profound statement. He said, "You know, if I would have known what it's like to live without guilt, I'd have sure started a lot sooner." And I just encourage you in that this morning. I don't find any verse in the Bible that helps me to be comfortable with known sin in my life. And so I just encourage us as teachers this morning. I don't know if this is the right place to add it, and I don't know if I should add it, but I think one of the things that tempts us as teachers sometimes is to get to thinking that these subjects are so important that nothing else matters, and we get a little bit proud because, after all, we are educators, and one natural byproduct of that is ditching Anabaptist curriculum to try to find something else that's a little bit better. And I just want to go on record this morning to say that I encourage you to use CLE, Rod and Staff, Anabaptist published curriculums. I'll leave it at that. Today, as I think of different ways that perfection applies to teachers, I want to think first of you and your student. The Bible says in Matthew 11, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." You're going to be laboring, and sometimes you're going to be heavy laden. But I notice that he says, "For I am meek and lowly in heart," in that same chapter. And then a few verses later, he says, "Take my yoke upon me, upon you." Now, you know what a yoke is. And If you're going to be yoked to one who is meek, then you will need to be meek too if this is going to work. So for a relationship with my students, I must first have a relationship with God. My responses to my students during the day have to be based on truth rather than emotions. If you hear the words, "he gets on my nerves," or you often hear the word, "he stresses me out," or whatever, coming out of your mouth, be careful. One of the things that I did with my students as I was introducing history last year, I was told them some things that were happening in my life, and I said, "Now, is that good or bad?" And they would say, "Good." And then I'd tell them the next part of the story, and I said, "Is that good or bad?" And they said, "Oh, that's bad." And then I tell the next part, and they said, "Oh, that was good." And they began to see that until we knew the whole picture, we couldn't say for sure if this is bad or good. And so many times, I have left the end of a school day very sure that that was bad, only to find out the next day that it produced something good. And if I only trust my emotions to get me through those things, then I might be calling bad things good and good things bad. Control your emotions, or your temper, I'm going to say, and your words. I look across you and I see probably most of you don't have the temper problem that I have. At least you look like a pretty laid-back bunch. But that was one of the things. I remember my school board chairman coming and saying, "Look, grabbing a boy like this on the shoulder is not the way we're going to deal with problems." And usually it's not. But I just encourage us. One of the verses that I finally put up in my office was, "The wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God." I read a story in that book, Shepherding a Child's Heart, that made an impression on me. He said, when a parent tells a child to take out the trash and they don't do it right away, and then he raises his voice and says, "Take out the trash," and they still are slow in doing it, and then you make some kind of threat and turn up the volume a little bit more, and they take it out. See, he obeyed. But he made this statement, that same child then, once they're a teenager, we're going to look at him and we're going to say, "Well, it must be the music he's listening to, it must be the friends that he's with, but boy, he's just not turning out." But really, it was back here. When you thought that your wrath was producing righteousness, it wasn't. It wasn't. And remember that. The wrath of man doesn't produce the righteousness of God. Avoid threats. If you say something, mean it. If you were on time for breakfast this morning, you might have noticed our van parked beside the road. I was trying to practice what I preach. See, I want to talk about meekness and mistakes. You know, we talk a little bit about being yoked to Christ means we're going to need to be meek. Sometimes you're going to make a mistake. And if you're not meek enough to handle that, it's going to upset you when you realize it. It's going to derail your class. It's going to distract you. It's going to distract the students. You'll find yourself knowing you made the mistake, but then you're picking at them for things that they do. It just works that way. We must be meek when we make a mistake. repent, confess, and continue. I think we heard a bit of that the other day. Don't feel personally rejected if someone rejects your idea. Brother Jonathan did a good job of explaining that again the other day. Be willing to accept that. That's part of meekness. You know, this morning I led a song, and that's just not one of my things. I love to sing in the shower. Brother Jonah could have done so much better than I did. But if as a teacher, he can do art better than I can, so I'm not going to do art. Or he can teach music better than I can, so we're not going to sing. Oh, you're missing out on so much. Mm-hmm. And you're giving your students plenty of ammunition for excuses just like the ones you use. So please, be meek enough to be able to do something that you're not the best at. Let's think about you and your co-teacher a little bit. I wish I would already know what you had heard earlier about your co-teacher, but I noticed that this morning we heard some about getting along with your co-teacher. One of the things that I think is important is just that in our visiting after school, we use temperance. And we'll talk about temperance more later, but remember Brother Uwe Steinman, I'm sure some of you know him. He used to say, temperance is none of the bad and the right amount of the good. And as I think of speaking after school, I think temperance sums it up well enough, because some of my co-teachers will testify that Mr. Miller likes to pack all of his homework in the briefcase, slap it shut, and walk out the door as soon as possible. And then there's other teachers who have the opposite problem. They would like to just camp out at school all evening. So I'm not sure which class you fall into. That's why I'm just careful to say, chat long enough after school that you can feel good about it later. And what I mean by that is if you have more my tendency, don't think, I really should have asked them how the day went, or I really should have helped work through that a little bit better, or I really should have stayed to do this, rather than just heading out right away. Or maybe you're on the other side and you think, whew, where did the time go? I guess I'll have to skip prayer meeting tonight because I still have a stack of checking to do. Because you were visiting. Use temperance in chatting after school. One of the things that I encourage you is remember, and just this morning in my Bible reading I read Philippians 4:8. Whatever things are true, pure, honest, of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's any praise, think on those things. I have sat through way too many gripe sessions. And it made an impression on me when I met a teacher who you could start whining about how your day went, and they might have, I'll pray for you, but they sure didn't add any fuel. It didn't take long before you realized this fire is going to go out pretty quick. And I appreciated that. Jonah mentioned the four little words, if it, that impressed me so much. I used those four little words, but it was different four words. I said, "Will you marry me?" And she did. we'll get to that part later. But remember, even temperance in how you talk. Sometimes we need to talk things over as co-teachers. I appreciated what our brother said a while ago. Talk to the parents before you just unload on your co-teachers. Most of us don't have a lot of experience in raising children. I used to have all the answers about raising children, but I don't anymore. Remember, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. Sometimes you think it's me against this student, it's me against his parents, it's me against the school board. That's not the case. We aren't wrestling against flesh and blood, the Bible says. It's against principalities and powers. In relating co-teachers, let me just talk a little bit to the sisters, a little bit to the brothers. Sisters, avoid that attitude, if I don't do it, nobody will. And so, you take responsibilities because your principal or your school board is just slow in seeing that this needs to be done, and so you just go ahead and do it. Wait patiently, there's virtue in that. Try to remind without nagging. We forget. It's pitiful how much we forget sometimes. If the copier needs toner, say it. And say it clearly. Don't hint. We're pretty dense sometimes. Don't say I was making copies and I couldn't quite finish. Say, will you please put toner in the copier? I can understand that and process it. So sister, just say it clearly without nagging as much as you can. Guard your heart. Teaching is intense. And we face the same struggles. Sometimes we have the same problem that we're working with, and we rejoice in the same victories. And just those things can draw us together, make us feel like we're a team. Guard your hearts. School there's a time for courtship and we need to be very mature and discerning if that's going to happen during school time. Brothers, I learned something. No, I'm learning something. When your co-teacher, a lady, comes to you and they're telling you this and this and this happened in my classroom today, and my first impulse, my wheels started turning for a solution. Okay, this is what you do. And after a while, I realized they're not necessarily asking you to do something. Sometimes they just need to tell you about it. And so, it's okay to just ask, is there some way you would like for me to help with this? Look at where it says, one more thing. Brothers, be pure in your music that you listen to, the reading that you do, in your thoughts. Make personal purity high priority. Have others help keep you accountable. Number three, you and your occupation. One of the things I'd like to encourage you is to read. Right out of high school, I got a job at a greenhouse, and he said, the one who reads, leads. Read a lot. But remember, thoughts produce actions. Be aware of the humanistic teaching that you're apt to read about when you talk about leadership and teaching and things like that.
In fact, just this week, I've used quotes out of that book, The First Days of School. And I've heard it recommended here. A lot of good practical teaching in there. But let me just tell you something. If you end up following his principles and accepting his attitude and his motivation, you're just going to be helping to send smarter students to hell. So be very, very careful about the kind of reading you do. If the teaching to be somebody, I'm going to liken that to crawling, compared to teaching to serve someone, that's like flying. So be careful with our reading. Teachers, be careful with technology. Jonathan already said, be careful about using a computer to keep your records. I've made an observation in teaching with lots and lots of different teachers. If you aren't too computer savvy, then using a computer to keep your records on and do a lot of your lesson planning doesn't save you much time. And if you are pretty computer savvy, then using a computer wastes a lot of time. That's just an observation that I made. Get your fellowship and advice locally as much as you can. We've heard a number of times, don't ditch your own friends, you're going to need them. That is very true. However, it's also true that if you're teaching in a new community now, you need to be making new friends. And you need to be seeking your advice from people who are right there and see more than just what you texted them today. Because all they're getting is just your perspective. The people around you are more apt to be able to see both sides of what's happening. I encourage you to leave your cell phone off during class time. That's another area of technology. Well, I consider myself to have pretty good control over it, but my curiosity gets the best of me if that little thing beeps or rings or something. I at least want to know who it's from. And you're going to find yourself sneaking over there, and I want my students to focus. Yeah? Well, then I better be a good example to them. The last there on C is, the letter T is temperance. Now I want to think a little bit about temperance and how we use our time. Time is precious. But someone, and I don't even know if it was one of you, but one of you told someone else that told someone else that told me that one of the ladies was thinking, I don't know if I have time to go to WFTI because I really feel like I should be in my classroom decorating the walls. And they said after the first day, they realized there are a lot of things more important than decorating the walls. Praise the Lord! You can come decorate my walls if you want to, but you know, as teachers, we need to budget our time. We already talked about after school, visiting with other teachers. That can burn up a lot of time. So maybe you've had your cell phone off all day, and now you can't wait to get to it and see what's there. And email and catch up with it. But be careful. Those can take a tremendous amount of time. Our brother mentioned keeping up with news. As a teacher, you're going to have to be very careful about how you spend your time. You know, I've heard a number of times that married men can't teach because school takes too much of the time. It takes too big a commitment. You know what? That's hogwash. Because
You watch. Those same people, if they're not teaching, in their other occupation, your occupation will expand to fill whatever time you allow for it. And so, I just encourage us, we need to understand self-control and temperance. Self-control, for one person, might mean spending a little bit more time at school. For another person, it might mean spending a little less. Just as a rule of thumb, if by, let's say, February, you still find yourself spending more than 12 hours a day at school, probably you should try to get some advice. How can I cut this down a little bit? Because it's very important that you do have some kind of life outside of school. Another thing that we need to use temperance in, and it's good practice for later in life, is how we spend our money. Did you know, you might not have known this, but it's not imperative that you go to the wedding of someone that you spent one evening and had a special prayer time at Bible school with. I'm almost embarrassed to tell you how many weddings I've been to where I haven't seen the couple since. You know, but in this day and age when traveling is so easy, we just flit here and there and everywhere. Teachers, I there's not too many board members here, so I'm going to say this, but I hope you're not getting paid too much. Because this is good practice for you in not stopping at Starbucks on the way to school. Right? Whatever it might be. Not elaborate gifts for the students. Just be cautious. Be temperate in how we spend our money. Temperance is the right amount of good, none of the bad. I'd like to think of you and your relationship with God. So you and God. It's important for those students to hear. This morning I read this in my Bible study. It's important for them to hear you quote something from the message on Sunday. Or maybe ask them, do you remember the preacher said this? And let them fill in the blanks. Oh, that's good experience for them. So they know. Remember the Sabbath principle. God created that. You need a day of rest. Take that day. As much as you can, leave your schoolwork behind on that day. You know, a temptation for us as teachers is to think, I'm almost too busy to spend time with God's people right now. But if we're going to have a relationship with God, we need a relationship with His people too. Don't skip midweek programs. If someone asks you to come over for dinner tonight, go for dinner. Your high calling just intensifies your need to be with God's people. And I said this one time, and a board member came up and he said, oh, but be careful. Our youth think that they have to go to every youth activity there is. You don't need to go to all the volleyball games. That's not what I'm talking about. But I'm talking about you taking time, sometime, to be with God's people. You need that now more than you did before you were so busy. Remember, meekness isn't weakness. Who gets the glory from your teaching? If you're going to have a relationship with God, remember you're yoked to Jesus Christ. He's meek and lowly in heart. So when someone nixes one of your ideas, it's okay. And when you have to do something you're not the best at, that's okay.
Because remember we talked about limitations a bit yesterday. That you might have some limitation. Brother Joan and I were just talking about it this morning, and I don't think he realized what a practical example we have in Jonah being excellent at music, being able to hear things that somehow this little apparatus doesn't pick up. And it's special to me to be able to listen to some of you sing and see how you understand what you're doing. I've made progress over the years because I want to teach my children to sing and enjoy singing. But I'm not Jonah. And he's not me. And so we're going to teach differently. And that's okay. You'll teach different than we do. You'll have that compassion with a first grader that some won't have. I might have compassion with someone who finds learning a little bit more difficult that some of you don't really understand. But that's okay. You won't change the world. It'd be nice if we could, wouldn't it? But you know what? You won't. It's special to me when I think that Jesus, when he came on this earth, limited himself. Not everyone that he came in contact obeyed or believed what he taught. He limited himself not to forcing them. They still had to make that personal choice. You know, I'm glad today that I'm not responsible for making all the choices for my students. But I do feel that as teachers, we'll give an account. I want to do it with joy and not with grief. I want to know that by God's grace, I was perfect. Now let's finish this little phrase here. It says, "You will not change the world, but God, working through you, can make a difference." As I think of this today, I want to just emphasize again that verse from 2 Corinthians 4:7. "But we have this treasure in earthen vessels," like normal bodies, normal people, "so that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us." Through your holy life, through your striving for perfection, God will get glory. Maybe you have questions or comments. Something that we talked about this morning before we close. I'll try to repeat it over the microphone so others can hear it if you have a question or a comment. Okay, thank you for... Yeah, Jonah.
Just thinking about the relationship of the teacher with the student. Is the teacher the student's friend?
Is the teacher the student's friend? You missed it yesterday morning. Brother Lloyd, could you just recap a little bit? We had an excellent little summary there about Jesus' example.
I think the same topic came up yesterday a little bit, and my thought was that Jesus was not afraid or ashamed to call his disciples friends. Mm-hmm. He said, "You are my friends if you do whatsoever I command you." And he wasn't afraid of that word, and he used it, and I think we can too. Needs to be, I think, defined, and we kind of decided that maybe the word "buddy" is what we're trying to avoid. And we don't want to be immature. We are the authority figure. We are the leader in the classroom. But I will have to confess, I consider my students friends. I consider the ones that have been in my classes in the past years dear friends. And I just think as Christian people, that has to be, there has to be an element of friendship there. The opposite is being an enemy, and we certainly
That's right.
I think it needs to be defined and clarified.
Mm-hmm.
And is that pretty much what we said yesterday?
I think that's exactly it. My takeaway yesterday was, that's right, authority and friendship don't have to be separate. Jesus had authority, but he said, you are my friends if you do whatsoever I command. Mm-hmm.
So, just thinking about that, what would Jesus have done if Peter had told him what to do? There was still, to their friendship, they weren't equals, right? The disciples knew that Jesus was in authority.
Mm-hmm. Using Peter for an example, the disciples still knew that Jesus was an authority.
Mm-hmm. I think when Peter rebuked Jesus for standing upon the cross, or he said, oh no, you know, that's not going to happen, Jesus, you don't understand.
That's right. Thank you for that. John?
A student came to me, or I called him in, I guess, because of an issue that needed to be resolved regarding his behavior, and I spoke to him by name, and I said, I like you. And I said, you have a lot more potential than what you're showing here. So friends have to confront others sometimes, but it can be in a kind way.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Friends have to confront others sometimes, but it can be in a kind way. Okay, thank you for your help this morning. You're dismissed.